Welcome to Star for the Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I've on SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us for the talk guest every Thursday night starting 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either dial on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. Call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the Talkshoe website at www.talkshoe.com and search for call ID 17702. And don't forget to use Chrome browser. And if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you want to reach me via Skype, my Skype ID is Franz Games, FRANZGMES. And of course, you can follow me on the Twitters. My account there is sfuoncall. So that's sfuoncall. Also, you can follow my personal account. My personal account is Paul Franz. If you want to follow me there, name is PaulFranz. And of course, the lovely Talkcast gets to into a podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from ADB this week. Steady work continues on multiple projects. Hailing frequencies for May and Communicate number 161 were released on Friday. Also, new on Warehouse 23, Drive Through RPG and War Game Vault was the SFB module G3 and G3A. Also this week, Steve Cole was out on vacation. So he had a wonderful time out there. I think the Wolf Sanctuary. And also they headed to Albuquerque. Him and his wife, Leanna. Steve Petrick was busy working on SFB updates. Also, Cabus Log number 53 and the Tholian Master Starship book. Yes, he's moved on from the Gorn Master Starship book onto the Tholian. Yew, that's awesome. Gene was busy working on parts of Hailing Frequencies and Cabus Log number 53. Also, you know, responding to people on Facebook. Facebook is always very busy these days. And also proofreading Cabus Log number... Sorry, Communique number 161, not Cabus Log number 161. Well, that would be a really... Wow. When it comes to... On to the SFB Online tournament. We have just the one at the moment. Still haven't sent out the email about Rat 49, but the Master 2018 tournament... still no progress there. I'm going to need to start beat on people. When it comes to the library report for this week, actually we do have some progress. Minor. because some of it was new, some of it was updated. You know, some of those were conversions, some were actually new deaths. The current completed conversion is 2,470. Yet to be converted down to 858, which gives the percent complete up to 74.2%. And with that, that is the news for this week. And it's me, yes, the one and the only Apollo Friends, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, well, it's just me. looks like Dave is busy doing something else, and I don't see Russ here either at the moment. I will be checking in the future, but tonight we're going to be discussing the Saltorian tournament tactics. At least we're going to start there. You never know, we might actually do another topic because that happens. Or you never know, Barry might call in. I doubt that at this point in time, but anyhow, given that fact, we're going to talk about the Saltorians, which is obviously one of, not my favorite, but close to my favorite tournament ship, because as I mentioned before about the Saltorians, one of the things I love about the Saltorians is, of course, the particle cannons. The particle cannons are one of those nice weapons. Obviously, there's issues with them. The biggest issue, obviously, actually, there's two kind of big issues in my mind. One, obviously, is going to be the leaky capacitor, i.e., to keep the energy in the capacitor, like 3 points of energy, you have to put 1.5 points of energy into the battery, into the capacitor, to hold three. So it's like, it's not exactly the best capacitor in the world. It's like holding energy, but it does, but at the same time, it's not holding energy. That's why it's called a leaky capacitor. That's number one. Number two is the tahit. The tahit is like a really bad disruptor or a photon. Same around, same tahit, basically, when it comes to overload, you know, range 8, which for the most part, that's where you're talking about. You know, outside of range 8, things get, you know, that comparison kind of goes out the window for the most part. But, you know, which is, you know, the bad things. Obviously, the one really major good thing that I really like about the particle cannons is that they're capacitors, which means because they're capacitors, you actually can fire them however you want. You know, you can fire them as overloaded or standard, whenever you want. You know, you don't have to decide at the beginning of the turn. You get to decide at the time of firing. Now, there's another benefit, which you can fire twice a turn. The bad downside of that, of course, is that the particle cannons can only fire once every 12 impulses. So unlike a regular weapon, you need to wait 12 impulses. So, to say the very least, waiting 12 impulses is not exactly a benefit. It's definitely a big downside when it comes to that, you know, comes to having a weapon, because most of them fire every a minimum of 8 impulses, i.e. between separate turns, but obviously I think it almost seems like it's a rule for SFB that is weapons that fire more than one time a turn. For another example of that, of course, is the Type C drone racks. They can launch once every 12 impulses. And same thing occurs with the particle cannon. So, you know, that seems like a rule that if it can fire multiple times a turn, obviously exception to that rule is, of course, the Gatlings, which can fire every impulse, but that's a quite a specialized weapon. So how you doing, DeBerry?
Hey, how are you doing? And remember that the Gat does have an 8 impulse delay. If you fire all, I think you can fire all 4 pulses in one impulse.
Yes, you can.
And then use that, there's an 8 impulse delay between turns.
Right.
So, yes and no. I'm not sure, but I think it's each pulse then has an 8 impulse delay before you can fire that pulse again.
That, I would think that is true. I just one thing, that's one of those rules that I don't get into, because we rarely have to run into it. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. So, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. You know,
interesting week last week.
Yeah.
Hey. I was in Colorado for the first time in my life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let me see, the farthest west I've ever gone. Well, actually, I have flown all the way to California once. And other than that, I've never been west of, like, Milwaukee, around Wisconsin.
Oh, so you've only been to California once.
Yep. I hate to fly.
Northern or south?
LA.
Fly.
Yeah.
Okay.
I went to LA for my brother to gather up my brother's things. Well, my brother-in-law's things after his death.
Oh.
So I was helping out my sister-in-law. Well, my brother-in-law's wife. So that was interesting, because my brother-in-law's wife's cousin came out from South Dakota to go pick up the truck. And drive him all the way back from LA all the way to South Dakota.
Oh, you drove all the way back from LA?
I didn't. My brother-in-law's wife's cousin did. That's right. I think it was either cousin or brother. One of her relatives that lived in South Dakota. But anyhow, yeah. Well, I've been out there once. I've flown like four times in my whole lifetime.
Really? Oh my!
Flown to California once. I've flown to Columbus once. I've flown down to Jamaica once. Did I fly?
That's four round trips then.
Three round trips, actually. Three. I didn't have a fourth. Yeah.
Okay, three round trips.
Yep.
I hate to tell you this, but I've flown more than that this year alone.
Oh, I agree. And some people who do, you know, tens of thousands of miles a year, you know. I prefer not to fly. So. But anyway, as if it wasn't obvious, I think you came in around the time I was talking about the Sartorian particle cannons. Decided to talk about the Sartorian tournament tactics, which is interesting to say the very least, because.
This week it is Sartorian tournament tactics.
Yep.
That's one of the interesting ships.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I paused two entries tonight. What the heck? Okay, I don't see one. Dave's here. Hey, Dave. Andrew Dural. Yes. The thing with Sartorians, obviously, is it's kind of like the Fed to a certain degree in that both of them only have direct fire weapons.
Yeah.
You know, Sartorian has, of course, the phasers. They also have the shield crackers, i.e. the shield crackers, web breakers, and then, of course, the particle cannons. Now, again, the shield crackers are one of those kind of very unique weapons. In that one, they're one of the.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. Sorry. You hear me, Barry?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. This one. Yeah. But, the shield cracker is one of those very unique weapons. In that it doesn't fire during the fire phase, basically. You fire decision and damage from fire. You fire it during the shield, you know, activating, deactivating shield phase. Actually, I think it's right. I can't quite remember when it comes to the impulse segments. If it is, I think it's after. Activate and deactivate shield. I think it's before.
Right. And the reason they put it there was so that you could fire it and you're not able to reinforce the shield so that somebody can fire it and then use their transporters on the same impulse.
No, the whole idea is that, the whole idea was that you could use that and the transporters to transport Marines, boarding parties onto an enemy ship. And if the shield is brought down during that segment, you cannot basically throw up general reinforcement to block shield transportation of boarding parties.
Correct.
So, It's, again, it's one of those, to me, very interesting weapons in that, you know, of when it fires. And it's kind of like an Andromedan displacement device to a certain degree, in that it's almost an announcement that you're going to fire your other weapons that same impulse.
Yeah.
So... Now, obviously, you can, in theory, you don't have to, but invariably you do because of your. There's always that one concern, which is between that impulse that you fire your shield crackers and the next impulse, your opponent can turn their shields to a brand new shield, making any damage that you put towards when it comes to the shield crackers pointless, or it's less useful.
Well. No. The shield cracker happens before direct fire weapons. So you can fire the shield cracker and your direct fire weapons in that order on the same impulse.
Yes, you can. Barry, you missed the point. Shield crackers can act to your opponent as a pre-announcement that you're going to fire rest your weapons during the fire decision segment. You do not have to.
Yeah.
There's no requirement that you have to. But if you don't, what happens is it gives your opponent the opportunity to change the shield that you'd be firing against.
Yes.
That's the point I'm making.
Yeah. But it also gives you an opportunity to get an impulse hex closer.
Oh, agreed. If you want to wait, if you might decide that okay, well, the shield crackers did no damage, then there's no reason to actually fire at that point. Really, if you can get closer, then you can wait. Of course, then the question is, will your opponent fire? Because to me, if in tournament play you choose to use call for fire in that instance, as a Saltorian, I would always choose call for. I would definitely say, oh, I'm going to call for fire, no matter what I'm going to be firing or not, just because it's going to be expectation by my opponent that I will be firing, even if I decide not to fire at all. You know, this is one of those arguments I've always had against call for fire. It is, well, come on, it is an announcement that you will be firing, or there's most probably 80 to 90% chance that you will be firing. It's rare. Every once in a while, it does happen that somebody will do a call for fire and not fire, because they're trying to out.
Right.
They're trying to do the whole metagaming stuff, which is kind of psych out the opponent. Say, "Oh, I'm going to fire." No, I'm not. You know, and which is not to me. It's not really part of the game.
It's a metagaming.
Right, exactly. As I said, that's what it is. It's a metagaming tactic, which really is not in the rules of the game. I know that Steve Cole ruled on this, stating that we will, you know, that when it comes to playing in tournaments. That will happen. You can actually ask for call for fire, and it must be used. But you have the opportunity not to do that. You can say that no, we're not gonna do that. We're actually going to we're gonna do pure impulse. I call it pure impulse activity, i.e., no, there's no you don't announce like in the displacement decision step. You know, the announcement that you're going to, oh, I'm going to be firing. You just, you make the decision and you fire. You know, there is no, you know, the only kind of mitigating portion to a certain degree, and I've already, I worked on this when the whole issue came up, which is the idea of going for a pure system. The pure system would be that you would actually always, every, both, you know, all opponents, I'm saying all because there could be more than two, click next impulse. When they're ready to go next impulse, they click next impulse. And if one of them decides that I want activity, you click activity, your opponent clicks next impulse, then at that, and when you select activity, you make your choice of your activity. So your opponent doesn't even know you're choosing your activity, that you're choosing to do an activity. So it is completely and 100% secret. Obviously, to a certain degree.
Yeah.
Because of there is the old issue, which is, of course, timing. If you click next impulse and you're, well, at that point, it doesn't matter. If you click next impulse and your opponent is actually doing activity, it's going to take him longer to actually do anything. But even if you find out at that point, it's too late. You can't do any activity. Or that's incorrect. You can't do any activity before your opponent's activity actually occurs. So if a person had decided to launch drones, you can't launch drones too. But you could launch, you could fire at the drones or launch shuttles on that same impulse that your opponent launches drones. That's fine. So, you know, to me, that is the most pure option that there could possibly be.
Well, I remember we had this discussion about, what, 10 years ago?
Yeah, we had a whole blow up in the discussion board.
Yeah, I remember I was always for pure impulse activity just because I felt it was cleaner.
Oh, yeah. I feel like that is what the rules state. The whole idea of the announcing for fire, that was just purely a convenience for your opponent. You know, because of how many times do people actually want to go for each and every segment of an impulse, every impulse? And most of the activity that occurs in an impulse is fire. You know, yes,
yeah.
Yes, we can do other things, but the one that people, you know, expect, well, it's in tournament play, because this is when you see it the most, is in tournament play, is, you know, fire. You have very limited options, you know? Because I think even when like webcasters are fire, you know, the only time that you might have fire was not fire is again, the Saltorian. You know, it's rare that you're going to drop a shield. It's rare that you're going to, obviously not rare to launch a drone or plasma or a shuttle, but even those are going to be less frequent than fire. You know, so. It is, but
it's kind of weird that you have all this activity that happens, and what would be interesting, I don't know if it's obviously this late date in the game, but if you had to plot out all your impulse activity, and then it all goes simultaneously in the order of precedence.
Right. Yeah, but yeah. In theory, you could. As I said, I think
things like if I put a tractor on somebody and he had put that he was launching a wild weasel, the tractor makes the wild weasel not happen.
That's right. But in that case, I still think for those things, I don't think we really need to plot them, because when you're basically at that point, what you're talking about play by email, is what you're talking about. But everything is
the way that system works.
Yep. You would plot things out, and then you'd have breaks, and some cases you would have conditionals. Now, obviously, certain activities were kind of automatic breaks, i.e., firing is an and resolution of fire is an automatic break. You know, you might have conditionals for, okay, this is how much reinforcement I'm going to be placing towards fire, so you don't have to break on fire, but that was the default break. So you, then the moderator can then go, okay, how much reinforcement do you want to go against your shield if you got an opportunity?
Right.
And in some cases, you might want to actually specify, okay, well, when I take damage, I want to keep this one, you know, which weapons do you want to keep on that? But for the most part, you know, you would plot out your activity, and if your opponent had an activity that occurred before yours, then you were allowed to change what your activity would be, i.e. in the case of your tractoring, then the shuttle would not launch. Actually, if you're tractoring, that's another breakpoint, because you have to find out from the other side, okay, well, how much energy do you want to put to breaking the tractor? So that, that's a special one you can't really plan plot for. What was that? I'm sorry.
I was planning on staying up late and being on this talk show forever tonight, because I've been shifting my hours around. Because Monday, I was going to be on the midnight to noon shift, and
ew,
my manager project said, "Oh no, you're not on." Even though I told you were on the midnight, apparently you're not. Like, oh, you're on the noon to midnight, not the midnight to noon.
Oi. So
after I spent days gradually getting my clock adjusted to rotating my clock, and now I have to go back. But I need to go to sleep. That's what I'm saying.
Okay, okay. Well, you have a good night, Barry.
You too.
Okay, bye. So with that, we will continue this discussion of the Saltorian and get back to Axel Saltorian and not get chasing rabbits talking about pure impulse activity versus call for fire, which after 10 years, I think I would hope if it had someone on the other side of the fence I could have a reasonable discussion with. It was quite heated at the time. I forget if I actually saved that discussion or not. I'm just going to do one quick check here, because I forget. Yeah, I think it would be. Give me a sec here. I'm going to see let's look. Dun, dun, dun. No, I do not see it. I have other things archived, but that's not one of those things that I have actually have an archived topic for. That's weird, because I know I archived a lot of things, because I needed to archive a lot of things, because at one point the discussion board was going to be upgraded and brand new, so all the topics were going to go away. But that didn't happen. So fortunately, we were able to keep our old discussion board. Though, there's one thing that I know DataB has to do. At some point, they have to upgrade the system, their host, to actually provide a certificate. Because, Lord knows, more and more places are going secure. And obviously, that's one thing that we really should be doing when it comes to the discussion board and also the FedCom, PHP, PBS. I think I got that right. But anyhow, to get back to the Saltorian discussion, so as I pointed out, you know, that's the beauty of now again, the Saltorian, the great thing about the shield cracker itself is also it's a web breaker. It's a, actually I think it's considered a web breaker slash shield cracker. That is that it was designed to be it was designed to be a shield cracker. And they and the Saltorians figured out a way of using it as a web breaker. Because originally the Saltorians were a subjugated race. I think they were genetically engineered to basically be the foot soldiers for the Tholians in what's the galaxy M something another. I forget the number off the top of my head, but they were, and they do the footwork. They would they're the ones who actually would go down the planets, or they were you know the Marines that would take over other races. Races or empires, ships, you know, that were under the Tholian will. So they have that special technology, which is the web breaker. Now, they're one of the few that actually have something that really could put a damper on the Tholian's strategy. That is, it actually can either weaken or completely remove a Tholian web. Now, obviously, most of the time, you're just going to weaken it. But weakening it, see, here's the benefit of weakening a Tholian web. That is, previously, if you would actually run into a Tholian web at a certain speed, you could actually break down. But if you use a web breaker to reduce the strength of that web, the speed you can be flying at when you run into the web goes up. So while previously you would completely avoid the web, you can now reduce it. That means you can, one, hit it at higher speed. Two, you don't have to spend nearly as many movement, i.e. impulses, in the web. So the Tholian doesn't get as nearly the benefit that he normally would get. So that's one of those really kind of cool benefits. That's one of the reasons why a lot of the Saltorians, well, they're one of those extraterrestrial, extraterrestrial means outside this planet. It's actually extragalactic because it's outside our galaxy. So you know, that's one of the reasons why I like the Saltorians. I understand that the Tholians are also extragalactic. Though, the thing is, the Tholians, I know they're extragalactic, but again, they were, to me, they always were part of the original, almost seemed like part of the galaxy by the time, you know, the way I'm thinking, it seems like they were actually part of our galaxy, for at least definitely for longer. Then the Saltorians came, I forget how many years after the Tholian showed up. So, as I pointed out earlier, one of the things about the Saltorian is that every single weapon of theirs is direct fire. This obviously presents two things. One, there's nothing to distract your opponent. So if you're playing a Saltorian, you have nothing to distract your opponent. You can't. Yes, you can. You can launch a shuttle. Your shuttles are gone. The only time you'd ever want to use that for "quote unquote" distracting your opponent is you have a suicide shuttle that you launch so that he doesn't kind of overrun you. I was thinking about when I was flying the Romulan against the LDR that I launched the suicide shuttles. So which makes things difficult for the Saltorian, because the Saltorian, he doesn't have a way of getting away cleanly and having it so that it will force your opponent, force the Saltorian's opponent to actually run the other direction, to turn away from the Saltorian, so the Saltorian can actually open, you know, the space. The only thing that, the only way to even have the possibility of opening the distance between the Salturian and his opponent is making sure that the shield that's going to be facing the opponent, facing you, is down. Obviously, shield number one, awesome target. Shield number two or six, also good places. But you know, that you can. There's only so much you can do. Yeah. I agree. Davis was pointing out that the weapons are based on assaulting Tholians. Yeah, well, the Will Cracker, the Web Cracker, definitely is designed for fighting Tholians, because Lord knows the Salturians hate the Tholians, which you can kind of understand their beef with the Salturians, you know. Yeah, Dave's saying that the Salturians are a one-trick pony. They're made for fighting Tholians. I disagree that they're one-trick pony, that they only can fight... Well, okay, their strength is fighting Tholians. I will agree there. But here is the thing with the Salturians, is that you can still fight the other opponents. For example, the Laren, you should be able okay against Laren. Obviously, the biggest issue there is going to be the ESG, because you're going to be running against... He's going to have the ESG up, and you're going to be running away from it. And so it's going to hit you. But obviously, if you can keep the distance open, you'll be okay. Now, like I've talked about before, which is, there's always two ways when it comes to dealing with seeking weapon races. For the Salturians, just like the Fed, there's two ways of dealing with it. One, speed. The other one is wall weasels. Because obviously, the biggest issue, both just like the Federation, the Salturian has the same issue, which is power. the same issue that the Laren has, which is power. To recharge the particle cannons takes a lot of power. Each shield cracker takes 2 points of power. Now, the wonderful thing about the shield cracker slash the web breaker is that it is a pure capacitor, i.e., when you charge it to, you know, 2 points of energy, any kind of energy, for two turns. No, sorry, for one turn. It costs zero to hold. That is great. Now, this is always one of those gotchas of energy allocation, which is, when it comes to weapons, where is your priority? And when it comes to Salturian, what I would do is phasers, particle cannons, because see, the particle cannons also have better distance, and you can put just a little bit into the particle cannons if you want to, and then shield crackers last. That's normally what I do, because of the as I said, the biggest issue with the shield crackers is limited range, and they don't have exactly the best to hit ratio. They're better, obviously, with like most weapons, they're better when you get them closer in. But also, remember that the shield crackers, they have absolute zero effect against a down shield. That's one of those reasons why I normally charge shield crackers kind of last in that category, because obviously you're going to first charge your phasers because of two reasons. One, they're one of the best offensive weapons you have, because of the flexibility and, of course, the capacitors. And number two, they are your defensive weapon. Those are the ones you're going to be using for firing against plasmas, drones, or shuttles, or fighters. That is your defensive weapon. That's the one you're going to be using while you're running away. And, of course, the Salturian has actually a pretty darn good phaser array overall, in my mind, because you got on each side of the ship, you got like two. What you have is you have two left side and two right side phaser ones, two left side and two right side phaser threes. So you've got 360 degree coverage for that. And of course, if you can line those things, line up perfectly, for, i.e. if you have a drone or a shuttle coming, plasma right behind you, you can center line them, because of that's where your opponent wants you to do. So you can do that. Or you can hit it once and then turn and get another pair while you're running away and still hit them. And then, of course, we have two phaser ones in the front, which are F, forward arc right, and two which are forward arc left. So you've got good coverage overall when it comes to around the ship. So off to, for example, off to the right side, you've got four phaser ones. Off the left side, you have four phaser ones. Directly behind you, you've got four phaser ones. Directly in front of you, you've got eight phaser ones. Off forward arc to the right hand, forward right, RF. That's going. You got yourself there. You've got six. Same thing for forward arc left. You know, the left side of the left front. It's a left front arc. That again, six. So overall, then of course directly out shields number five and number three. Again, you've got four phaser ones. It's only when you get back into the rear, right rear and left rear, those is when you only have two phaser ones. But you, of course, you have the two phaser three. So overall, you've got good defensive phaser array. So that's why that's another reason why I like the Saltorian ship, is because of the phaser array is quite useful. You can both use it for defensive and offensive capabilities. And so when it comes to tactics, you're flying against like a seeking weapon opponent. As I mentioned with the Federation, you have to decide on one or two tactics. One, running around the board like a freaking bandit, just booking around it, and decide that you're going to use your phasers, which are a good phaser array, and speed to defeat the plasmas and the drones. That's one. And then the other one is, while weasels, find a position where you actually can sit still, recharge. The thing is, obviously, the beauty of that, of using wild weasels, is that you get a position where you can sit still, have the seeking weapons hit your ship, you can sit still, recharge, and then start again. Now, obviously, the biggest issue with that, and I think everyone will agree, is that, yes, you save power, but you also give up speed. You give up the initiative, because in SFB, in Federation Commander, speed is life. In my mind, also, of course, speed is initiative. You get to decide. You get to react to your opponent instead of having, you have to guess what your opponent's going to do and then move accordingly. Now, that's because we're also using free movement. If you go back and go for at least partial pre-pod movement when it comes to SFB, eight impulses, I think the original one was either 32 or 16. I'd have to look back at the original book. I forget if I bought an e-copy or not. I can easily get a copy. It's not that expensive. But for that, for the original pre-pilot was the rule. But anyhow, if you've been listening to this podcast long enough, you know how I feel about pre-pilot movement, which I love. And in that case, you have to plan on what your opponent is doing beforehand, and then you're moving that go accordingly. Now, obviously, you guys can both guess wrong, which is fine, you know. But I think I still think that's a really neat dynamic, the whole idea of pre-plotted movement and the use of pre-plotted movement. I think that is this. Dave says fooey on pre-plotted movement. Smiley face. Doesn't know. That's to let you know he actually is kidding. But anyhow, so those are obviously two options for that. When it comes to tougher things, the tougher things are, of course, going to be things like the Orion. There's going to be tougher things like the Fed again. Now, when it comes to the Orion does the whole phaser boat thing, you're in trouble as it stands. Because of obviously he can do what will be done against the Andromeda, which is chase around the board and just beat on your butt, you know. So I think that, you know, there's nothing you can do about that. Obviously, the great thing about flying against the Fed, now obviously you don't want to get too close to the Fed. Feds want to get close to you, but you really don't want to get that close. Trust me, you don't want to get that close. If you can avoid, obviously, you can do a lot of damage. You can do 8 points of damage, you know, per particle cannon. And then, of course, you got the shield crackers. If I recall correctly, I think there's three at the moment. Let's see if I can find that. That's the one. Just give me a sec here, because I had to bring up the SSD book. I should have brought it up beforehand. I apologize. But found that. KIC LDR. Oh, there's the Saltorian. Yes, currently it has three web breakers, i.e. shield crackers. And that's one of the things that's a benefit, is that, let's look at the to hit for shield cracker at range 2, it's 1 to 5. Range 3 to 5 is 1 to 4, and 6 to 10 is 1 to 3. So that's the big issue there, is on the extended ranges. And obviously range 5 is would be perfect for you, because of range 5, you get the 1 to 4 to hit, so you got most probably 2 out of 3 are going to hit. So that's additional 8 points of damage. So the problem with the particle cannons is the particle cannons at range 5 is 1 to 3. So you want to be like range 4 for particle cannons, which again is 1 to 4 to hit. Now, of course, I'm willing to bet that I think the photon, let's give me a sec here when it comes to the, oh, it's the first one, isn't it? Yeah, right there. Okay. When it comes to the Fed, right there, again, the to hit breaks the same spot, which is 1 to 4 to hit at range 4. So even so the Saturnian, the particle cannon, and the Federation photon torpedo, they have basically the same to hits. So range 5, range 4, you know, it's a roll of the dice. The question is, Punk, do you feel lucky? And I truly mean that. If you feel lucky, go for range 4. If you don't feel lucky, go to range 5, be a little more cautious. Obviously, the biggest issue there is going to be timing of your firing your particle cannons with his photon torpedoes, because if you fire before, that's kind of fine, but if he closes the range to be closer to you, then obviously that was all for naught, because you could have done more damage at the same time, he gets closer, he gets the better to hit, but you didn't get the better to hit. So, you know, you have to be ready to run, which means probably what you're going to want to do, that would mean that if you want to be prepared to run, is that you're going to need to have it so that when you face him, when you're finally on that battle, the final leg of that battle pass against him, one, definitely don't center line him because of, you forget about one minor issue with the Fed, which is he's got eight phaser ones also center line. So if you center line him, he center lines you. You both have eight phaser ones sitting at each other. You both have your heavy weapons sitting at each other. Of course, if you're center lining, you're facing directly at each other. Basically, you're playing chicken. Do you actually want to play chicken with a Fed? I think not. Because the only way out of playing chicken with a Fed is a hit. I.e., the only thing I would possibly ever try is if you can get it timing just right, where you both enter range five of one and center lined. Next impulse, you move, he doesn't. And you're able to keep that range to range six. So that even if you get to range five, okay, you fire. If he decides to not fire, you've got the better range. And you can keep that range outstanding. Of course, you also have to be closer to one of the edges so you can go towards the center and not going out towards the edge of the map, in which case you're screwed. This is one of those few opportunities. So let me finish that tactical situation. Okay, in that case, you can do a 360-degree hit. Remember one thing about the Saltorian. Saltorian has what? 32 points of warp. What does that mean? That means the Saltorian can do something that no other movement class one ship in the tournament can do. It's got fast warp, which means that it can actually go speed 28 and still hit. Yes, you heard that right. You can go speed 28 and still hit. Unlike any of the other size class one ships. So keep that in mind, because that is also one of those things. You'll remember your tractors. Remember that you can hit at faster speeds. So in this case, if you're going for that playing chicken thing, that's when speed 28 could possibly save your butt and be able to hit speed 28 because you have more movement opportunities, and then get out and keep the range open to at least six. If you could extend it even more, better. Obviously, six at the very least. If you have a full overload photon fed, just barreling down your butt, at least with range six, you've broken to the new bracket when it comes to the phaser ones. It really drops down when it comes to the average. Let me just look at it real quick. I'm just doing this off the side of my head. 5, 7, 6, 13. So it's approximately 2 points per at range six. While at range five, it's more of an average of three. So that's a heck of a lot more damage between those two range brackets. And that's why, that's the only time you have to get that. The problem is, of course, is always timing. Timing is critical in this. Now, again, when you're facing the Fed, here's one of those ones that is interesting. And I do mean this. This is one of those few opportunities that you might actually want to use a Wild Weasel. Why? Because if you need to recharge, you can use that Wild Weasel to protect your butt while you're charging, and because you get the EW shift. It's one of the few opportunities that actually having an EW shift really makes a difference, because it really screws up the photons. Because let's say that he basically, if he overruns you or gets range one, That's a 1-4 to hit at range 1. And if I recall correctly, there's feedback damage at range 1 against the Fed. Because the true range is 1. So he would actually get feedback damage. Actually, I'm positive of range 0 and 1. He gets feedback damage when it comes to the Klingon. The Klingon fires at range 0. He gets feedback damage when it comes to overloaded. This reminds me about my first game when I was flying the Stealthorian. The Fed. I was beginning to learn SFB. It was my first game. I was flying the Fed against the Klingon. And I get the Fed against the Klingon using the basic rules. Well, in the basic rules, you have no overloads. So the Fed got the range 0 and he couldn't fire his photons at the Klingon. You know, it's just one of those goofiness of the whole situation. But anyhow, obviously most of the time you want to try to stay outside of that range. If you get to range 4 with the Fed, not with no opportunity to get to range 5, then I'd say take it. Or, you know, not the face yet, range 4. Maybe, no, I'm just thinking about the possibility having him hit to get you range 5. That might not be such a bad thing. So, that's how, you know, how I would, when it comes to when it comes to the Fed, I would go for the Wild Weasels. Because I think it's a better opportunity to, when it comes to facing the Fed in the Stealthorian, is the Wild Weasels to protect yourself versus the suicide shuttles that you can use to when you're coming close in. You really don't want to be too close into a Fed. Because if he recharges those photons, that can really start to hurt something fierce. Obviously, you got quite a few weapons. You got the particle cannons have the same arcs as the photons, i.e. the forward arc. So no one has anything really extended arcs when it comes to that. Already told you about seeking weapons. When it comes to the Hydran, obviously it's the same thing, which is, I've told before, which is if he is flying around. Okay, this is one thing. I would think the Hydran is not going to. I think the Hydran will separate his fighters from his ship. And this is the reason why I say that. Because normally Hydrans have, you know, tractor their fighters and drag them with their ship, mainly for seeking weapon defense. Though obviously it's good for an additional 2 phaser Gs and 4 fusions. You know, if he's going to close in on a person's ship. So I think most probably he'll probably separate them off, and you, when you fly off, the fighters are going to be chasing you. The Hydran ship might actually lag a little behind while he's recharging his hellbores. So in that case, you're going to, obviously your focus is going to be wanting to kill those or at least cripple the fighters and keep them away from the Hydran ship if the Hydran decides to separate them. If he does not decide to separate them, decides just to keep them as additional weaponry, then, you know, I'd still say focus on the firing on the ship and ignore the fighters. Because, yes, he can recharge the Hydran can recharge them for free because of the fusion freezers. He can do that once. Now the tough part, of course, is going to be recharging those fusions. If he wants to recharge the fusion, he might decide they're not even recharge the fusion. Just say, okay, these are just additional Gatlings, which is, I would think, is probably the way he would go. So. Again, it's going to be the same situation as you have with the Fed, because it's direct fire. Everything is direct fire. I would definitely keep, I would avoid closing in too close because, of course, those fusion beams can just be killer. And same for the phaser Gs. They're all just for close in fire. And obviously, the big thing that the hydrant has, the Achilles heel of the hydrant is, of course, Mysia. That is, if you get those shields down and you're able to do it over multiple impulses, beat on it. You know, fire through. You know, if you do really good and you're down, you get down shield, and you're able to bust through for like with some phasers and all your particle cannons, that's great. In that case, you can then start beating on it with your phasers and just try to de-weapon the ship, because that is the Hydra Achilles heel, because he's got drone and torp and phaser. Drone and torp and phaser. So if you get there's 5 points of damage, which is the optimum Mysia, you have a good opportunity to remove a lot of weapons off that ship. Obviously, the biggest issue there is just keeping the down shield facing you. That's always the difficult part about when trying to put forth a Mysia attack. So I would try to do that. Obviously, keep the range open. Obviously, one thing you can do because of this. Well, actually, I was going to say come into range 4, but now I was thinking about it and going, you know, I'm pretty sure that the Hellbores, I'm just going to do real quick. Yeah, Hellbores, their range, their to hit increases at range 4. Again, thank you very much. It's the same kind of thing as with the photons. Do you feel lucky? Actually, I think it's less of luck because, and even the amount of damage difference is 3 points. 3 points of damage between the two. And yes, it gets easier to hit, but not much easier because it's the Hellbore uses two dice, not that much. And of course, the fusions don't really become effective until range 2. So that doesn't matter either. So you can probably come into range 4. Obviously, you have to make sure you keep that range open, because if he gets to range 2, you're dead meat. You're dead meat. So keep the range open. Obviously, you want to try to have your battle passes so that you are towards the wall and not near the center, because the center means that he can just keep running your butt down. He might want the same, you know, because the one thing, you can't do everything based on fear, as in based on a fear of what your opponent's going to do to you. That you assume that your opponent's going to keep dogging you down and attacking you. And that's not always going to be the case, because if you damage the right shield, they have to ease up, because otherwise that down shield is going to be facing you. You can, because of the weaponry you have when it comes to the arcs, basically the arcs of your phasers, you'll be able to fire the phasers. Even if it's a down shield, even if it's range 15, you've got a 3-to-1. So you got a one average damage of 1 point of damage per phasers. That's average. So you got an opportunity to get internals. So, you know, that's a great benefit. And if you can nick a weapon, you're good. Obviously, when it comes to any ship with cloak, if your opponent decides to cloak, say thank you and slow down and just recharge. Because that's actually the one thing that if an opponent of yours ever cloaks, he's dumb. I truly mean that in all sincerity, because of that's what you want him to do. Because of, I mean, he can't attack you. I mean, even with his plasmas, he can't. There's no reason to. Because the only reason that he'd ever want to cloak is to protect himself, you know, to have it so that basically the biggest EW benefit he could ever have is there. And that also be a desperation move. It'd be late in the game, and because of he wants to avoid getting damaged at that part of the late game. The problem is late in the game, you don't have the power to charge your cloak and do anything. So that's why I would think that if you ever have an opponent cloak against you, they're dumb. So don't ever expect to see that. But if you do, if your opponent does do that, slow down. You know, I would say, you know, if it's somebody takes you completely off guard, run away from them, or better yet, actually close in on them. And have it so that you wait for him to come out of the cloak. If you have to, if you want to, sit there, just sit. And wait for him to come out, you know, recharge everything fully, and when he comes out, just blast him completely. So, already talked about, you know, basically keep your butt running. Anything special about the Klingons or? Obviously, I'll just duplicate it again. When it comes to the Tholian, now, here's one thing about the Tholian. The Tholian, because of he knows about your web breaker, he might not use that, cast that web as much as he would do against other opponents. Because I'll look at the web breaker chart real quick. Web breaker chart, if you get to range 0 to 1, well, get range 1 of that web, you can actually remove 20 points of power off, you know, off that web. It goes from 10 to 20, so it averages out somewhere around 15. And range 2, again, it's around averages around 14. 3, you know, keeps going down. But, you know, obviously you're going to be, if you actually fire at it, you're going to do it at a close range. If he actually ever uses the web caster as to cast a web and actually use it as terrain. Now, most probably he's still going to do it. Because the one thing that even though you can actually ruin his day when it comes to, you can actually blow down his web, but it's still hard. You can do it. Especially since you have 3 web breakers. He has 1 webcaster. Though obviously you have, he has the, what are those things called? The small webcasters, I forget what they're called. Snares, web snares, there it is. They're the web snares. That can fire, so it can create these small little webs, and those are quick protective measures in my mind. But when it comes to webcasters, you know, they might still use a webcaster to throw up that web for a temporary blockage when it comes to fire, so that you can't fire at him at a longer range. So you might still use it even though you have web breakers and actually could just trounce his web. I have not calculated out exactly how much it would take. Here it is. Okay, so if he does puts 5 points of energy and 5 hexes, that's 10 per. So that would require all 3 web breakers to bring that completely down. And you could do it. It just, you know, but again, in my mind, he might still use it because of the reason why he does that is that he wants the ability to have you approach him and not be able to fire at him, and possibly even have it so that you get close to him and he gets to fire at you and you can't fire at him. Now, there's always the issue that you can, at that point, you know, you can still use a web breaker to just completely trounce and get rid of that cast web. Because you, with three web breakers, you've got enough oomph to completely destroy a 5-hex web. Even less hexes. You have the ability to completely any single web caster can cast. You can destroy it, assuming that you have all three, of course. So he might decide that it's not worth it. They're just going to use webcasters as a web bolt, and use as another direct fire weapon. So in which case, turns into a kind of like almost like a Fed to a certain degree, and that it's pure direct fire versus pure direct fire at that point. Now, obviously, unlike the Fed, the Tholian still has that option open if he decides later to use it. So, and for him, there's a good reason to use it, because he can use it to control your movement. Now, obviously, that's the great thing about web breakers, because actually, if I'm facing a Tholian, that's one of those times I would change the order of keeping things charged. It's still, it actually, I'm debating my own mind right now whether it would actually be phasers first or web breakers first. At this point, I'm thinking web breakers. Okay, let's back up. It all depends on one critical factor. It all depends on whether that after the first battle pass, because the first battle pass usually will show you the tactics he's going to be using. And so, if you base it off that, if he decides to use the web, cast the web, then definitely I would choose to put energy towards the web breakers, have a priority over the phaser, because in this case you're not worried about defense. You're going to use those phasers as offense. Your defense, all your defense is going to be in those web breakers. So you need to be prepared for that. Now, obviously, if he decides, I'm not going to cast the web anymore, you still have shield crackers. So you can still have additional offense, just like he does. Obviously, as Dave pointed out, the Satorian and the Tholian is, it's a classic matchup, a very classic matchup. I have not actually done that. I would love to do a classic matchup of Saltorian versus the Tholian. Me being the Saltorian and not the Tholian, because I don't think I could fly the Tholian very well, to be honest. But you can do it. I think that's one of those fights that can be quite interesting, because both opponents have both defensive and offensive options, which are not normally there. Because, you know, a webbreaker is kind of pointless against anything but a Tholian. So in that case, his defensive options are very limited. They're limited to wild weasels and to phasers. That's defensively, that's all you've got. And obviously speed, but that's something that's, you know, goes without saying. Yeah, true. Dave's mentioning that the Tholians are hard. They're like Klingons that don't turn as well. And definitely, I think the Webbreakers basically apply greatly into that. And again, it depends upon how the Tholian actually flies his ship. I'm just looking to see against the Andromedans. Hey, another one which is purely direct fire weapons. Obviously, he has the T-bomb to consider. So, and he can do what I've mentioned when it comes to the Andromeda against the Orion, which is use it to adjust your movement. Because they have it so that what in case of you actually getting closer, he would stop you from getting closer by putting that T-bomb in place. Now, obviously, the one thing to keep in mind when it comes to the Andromeda, can use a pseudo transporter bomb. And that's one thing, and that's And an excellent use of it because of, in the case of Andromeda, I actually put out two just to have you guess. Since you don't know which one is the real one, you have to decide if you're willing to take the 10 points of damage on that facing shield, because in a lot of cases, you're not willing. Why you're not willing? Because the Andromeda's going to be right there to take advantage of that. You run into it, he comes in, usually the same impulse, and he can fire on that damage shield and just ruin your day. Especially with the Andromeda being the way it is, with only three TRLs, you know. I wish I had the four. But anyhow. So, as a Saturnian, when it comes to the Andromeda, you're going to be flying around a lot. So you want to keep that speed up, though, obviously. You want to keep that speed up because you want to be chasing the Andromeda like the Orion can. Now, in this case, the Shieldcrackers don't do squat. If I call correctly, I don't think the Shieldcrackers actually affect Andromeda panels. But I have to double check on that one. Maybe if it did, what's the point? If they affect anything, I would just fire them and just let them go. In that case, basically what I would do at that point is just chase around the Andromeda, firing phasers and focusing on those. Possibly if you want to let up, slow down and have to the Andromeda's running away, but you're going a little slower, you recharge your particle cannons. And then next time he comes in, you have a better ability to beat on him. Obviously, keep in mind his displacement device, because this is one of those times that the Andromeda might actually do one of those crazy things, which is the New Jersey style of play, which is keep nice and close, because, though obviously you got the Saturnian has a very good phaser array, i.e. you can actually do knife fighting pretty well, because of, you just turn shields to new shields, you have new weapons, you know, it's pretty well. Obviously, the difficulty about the Saturnian is to keep in mind, which is turn mode of D. Thank you very much. Got the Gorn turn mode, which sucks dirt. Obviously, it's not an issue when you're flying against the Fed, because guess what? The Fed also has a turn mode of D. Yay! Hey. So, you know. But when you're facing a turn mode of B, i.e. the Andromeda, that does become an issue if you decide to do a knife fighting. You know, that makes a big difference. So, I think that about covers the main tactics, and obviously the gotchas when it comes to flying the Saturnian. Remember, speed is your friend. You can use Wild Weasels both for defensively to sit there and charge your weapons. And obviously, remember in the case of the Fed, using that to charge your weapons, but in addition, protect yourself from those photons while you're charging those weapons. Of course, the Fed. The photons take so much energy. It's just so much energy. It's just freaking nuts. So, and I think with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.